Caroline, Willie, D-Mays. Stay tuned in for Nashville Sounds Baseball today at 6.05 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers, AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Joining us now is Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, always appreciate having you on every week. Your biggest takeaways from the Titans preseason game on Saturday night in Minnesota?
Great to be back with you guys. Always enjoy this. First and foremost, I think Tajay Spears comes to mind for me. The Titans have a real weapon with him. And just whenever I think, well, you know, I'm not very athletic, but I've seen it all. Here's a guy that apparently doesn't have an ACL and has arthritis in his knee, hurling dudes, and is the best guy on the field in the preseason. So hats off to Spears. I think he's more than just a piece to the puzzle. They can really use him, especially in where they're lacking the speed in the passing game, and that element that's hopefully can be consistent with what they can add with Tim Kelly's offensive play calling. Beyond that, I thought Malik Willis continues to show areas of improvement and areas where you still see things that, like, yeah, he's a backup quarterback. And should we be thinking that? I mean, I think he's vastly ahead of where I expected he would be. And that's partly due to where Will Levis is right now compared to where Malik Willis is, and also due to his attention to detail in the offseason where he's throwing the football a bit more. But he's still got to, his best asset are the legs and the running. And unlike last year, now we're hearing Vrabel say, hey, do more of that. And the key is blending that together and using his best skill set while also posing a threat and being able to use the pass game as the dual option for him. Those are the two big takeaways for me, Caroline. And as far as the kicking game goes, plenty of questions there moving forward for a team that, once again, has questions in that area. We touched on this last week, and I'm not really sure why they allow themselves to be in this spot.
Yo, the kicking is just brutal. And I want to get into that, but I want to go back to your point about Malik Willis. Jonathan Hutton is with us. Do you think Malik helped or hurt his case to win this backup quarterback battle on Saturday night?
Well, he helped it. Like right now, same place we were last week, right? Right now, I think Willis is the backup quarterback on September the 10th. Is that good or bad? That can be argued. But, I mean, with Levis not playing and with Willis, for the most part, going the duration of that game, minus Mason Kinsey taking some snaps. Yeah, I have no doubt right now that he would be the active quarterback on game in week one against New Orleans. But I think it also shows, regardless of who's the backup quarterback, it is undeniable the importance of just keeping a clean pocket for Ryan Tannehill. Not even just from the injury standpoint, banged up where you take away his mobility in the pocket a bit, like we saw last year until he was ultimately knocked out with the ankle for the rest of the remaining games. Caroline, the quarterback situation behind him, and it's not good across the league when you get to your backup, but if you need a drive, if you're down one in the fourth quarter with a minute and a half to go, and you need to go get a field goal, right now, I don't trust the backup quarterback or the kicker to go down and get their job done. But you can't just do that by running as a quarterback. You have to be able to let it fly. And the backup currently, I don't trust in that situation, unlike other situations where you can at least keep it balanced if you want to as a play caller.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow. Excuse me. Now, Hut, looking at one area I am starting to be a little bit concerned about, which I really wasn't at the beginning, is the tight end position. I was disappointed in Chig that he two catchable balls. He dropped both of them. That's uncharacteristic of him. I look for him to do better moving forward. But behind him, the depth behind him isn't there as far as pass catchers. What do you see at that position?
I'm with you. And Okonkwo is the key piece of what you're discussing there. They have factored in, and I think it's a fair expectation for him to take that big jump. You know, they it's not like whenever it's not unlike whenever Jonnu Smith in 2020, Mace, had what, like 400, 450 yards receiving, something like that. But he found the end zone. And to what you just mentioned, he's not dropping passes. Mm-hmm. Okonkwo doesn't have to be the game breaker. I think he has that certain athletic ability in key spots, but he's got to be the guy that moves the sticks and that you can rely on. He can't be, in certain situations, the guy that forces the three and out by just catching or not making the easy catch to put them in a position. Even if it's second down and long and it ends up being third and short, make that catch. So it starts there. And they kept three tight ends on the active roster to begin the season last year. I think this year it's more likely four, because what they did is they counted Carter as one of the tight ends on their depth chart, even though he's a fullback. He made the roster as a fullback. They're going to they're going to move guys in the backfield there, and then put them out and motion them out to the tight end. And you know what? If I'm thinking about what the tight ends and the importance of who you're carrying and who you're not, right now it still remains the run first offense. It still remains an offense that you're not certain on in regards to the offensive line. They need to bulk up on the edge a bit, and that's where more of the blocking inline tight ends come to mind more than Chig. Both have to play their part, and Okonkwo's got to be the number one.
Now, the one thing that did hit me, Hutt, this week, well, last week, right before the game and during the game versus the Vikings, is, and it didn't hit me prior to this, I'm truly worried about this team, because I'm watching everybody else play, and it seems like they got a good grasp on what's going on. The depth behind them looks pretty good. Not great, but good enough. But then I watch the Titans, and I see, other than the defensive line, I see no depth on this team whatsoever. And that scares me.
And that goes back to, at some point, you have to hit on some of these picks, right? Mm-hmm. And you eventually have to pay the price for it. They've swung and missed on some high picks on the offensive line recently. For back-to-back years, argue one way or the other, but for back-to-back years, they've drafted a backup quarterback and a backup running back on day two of this draft. And that has left them with low-end picks at wide receiver at best. And even prior to that, some of their higher picks at wide receiver, even on day two or early day three, have not panned out. So that's where the young core that we touched on a bit recently, as far as young talent, first contract guys, who are you really excited about as either right now they can step in and be impact players, or guys that you feel like are very close to then being described as that? To me, there's maybe four on offense with Burks, Okonkwo, Skoronski, and now Spears. And the rest of this team, it's very top heavy in terms of veterans. It's guys that are finally getting to a second contract like Jeffrey Simmons, which is well-deserved. But it's also – it's just a weird roster in terms of it appears as though exactly how we described it this offseason. One foot in, one foot out. Are they in or are they rebuilding? How do we describe this roster? They're an injury or two away from being a very easy description. And we know how injuries have factored into this roster over the last 2 years. It's not good in terms of depth and in key areas. I don't even think it's great in starting roles, which is why, you know, right now the injuries at wide receiver, one of the starters in week one's probably on another roster right now. I mean, if you just start looking around at punt returner and what they're doing, inside linebacker, certainly depth at corner / defensive back. I mean, I'm looking at those areas and thinking, oh, and by the way, kicker. We could see four positions with different names on the back of the jerseys that are currently playing for another team. Meanwhile, I think on the offensive line, the guys that get cut on the 29th next Tuesday are virtually described in the same way. So I don't know if you really get an upgrade when the massive cuts happen, other than just rotating guys in and see who can be consistent and who hasn't been.
More with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. 106.3 The Game. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow is with us now.
All right, Hutt, let's break down Michael Badgley. I was looking at some of his numbers. I had not, as they make the choice to go with an experienced kicker, every Titans fan, I'm sure, flashed back to their experience with Michael Badgley, the one performance where I was actually in the stands watching as a fan where he missed an extra point, he missed a field goal, and then he was done. He got booed out of the stadium, and he was gone. But by the end of that year, he had gone to Indianapolis, and he kicked pretty well. For whatever reason, they didn't keep him, and he kicked for two more teams last year. So he seems to be the, if you need a kicker, call 1-800-BADGLEY, and you can get him. Like, he's kicked for five teams. So they think he is an upgrade over unproven guys that I guess had struggled. So what do you think we're getting here?
Well, just based on what Vrabel's saying, I mean, he's, you know, this is back-to-back weeks where the kickoffs have not been great. And, you know, he's viewing it as an upgrade on who they have, Willie, not maybe what they want to have. So get someone in the mix now and then see what's on the waiver wire come August 29th at the deadline for the cutdown day. Look, this is an issue for this team, as we well know. They know it too, because it's part not being in position offensively last year, and also part because they didn't trust their kickers to actually attempt many on the field. The NFL average for attempted field goals last season was 33 attempts, and the Titans had 24. That was the fewest in the National Football League. 24 attempts. The average is 33. You know, you've got the games where Kansas City, Titans are up 17-9, and they end up punting from the 42-yard line in that game. There was 12 minutes and change left in the game at the time of a 1st-and-10 snap, and they end up punting from the 42. It's 1st-and-10 at the 39. They were not able to rely on their kicker in that. They missed the field goal by Randy Bullock to beat the Giants against Cincinnati. Shudak missed from 35 yards, and it was 10-10 right before halftime. Cincinnati ends up winning 20-16. That changes the complexion of a game. Look, the Titans only attempted, not made, but attempted 10 field goals from 40 or more yards out. That is the second fewest behind Philadelphia, who was exceptional at moving the sticks and scoring points. Meanwhile, we know this is an offense that, in large part, it's crushed by a missed three. You know, you three matters here based on how this team is built. They want to be great on defense, and they can be. They need to be good on offense, and they can be. But there are a lot of intangibles with that. And good on offense means getting three on the board. If you can't put it in the end zone, at least extend the lead, at least attempt to, instead of relying on, you know, your Pro Bowl-esque punter and his accuracy to not boom it through the uprights on a punt, but actually pin an offense deep in their own possession. And I won't even get into the 50 yards or more. Look, the NFL attempted as a league 224 field goal attempts from beyond 50. The Titans accounted for two of those. That is way – the NFL average is 7 per team over a given season. That is a huge miss, swing and a miss, on what they have tried to do at kicker over the last couple of years. And it's not easy, but it's got to be better than this if you're bringing two guys in. And before you even reach the third preseason game, you've seen enough and you're bringing in a journeyman to hopefully catch fire, which – and more likely you're bringing in someone else – by September the 10th to kick in week one. It's not a good situation, and they didn't have many makes, let alone attempts last season.
It's an interesting case you make because I'll play the other side of the argument just a little bit here with yeah. Bullock, because there is an argument basically that's saying Bullock, just because of his tenure in the league, is a little more expensive, and it's more of a money-saving attempt when you're trying to find a guy that's maybe just as good or better for a cheaper price. That's a little bit what they did with Stonehouse last year over the veteran that they had in Brett Kern. And we can argue, what would it have looked like with Kern you know, knowing how good he is at some of those little things you were saying, Hutt. But let's save that, because that's a different discussion. But Bullock, he didn't miss an extra point last year, which is not a given anymore, right? Most kickers are going to miss one here and there. And he was 17 for 20 in the field goals. Now, he missed the one in the Giants game that we all remember, but he hit some big ones. I had not thought about the how many times did they pass up a chance for a 50-some-odd yard field goal.
Or 40-plus, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but he was 17 for 20.
Only made seven.
He was 6 for 8 from 40.
Beyond 40, Willie. It's bad.
Yeah, yeah. So he missed two games, and I can't remember why he missed the two games. But I guess I'm asking, was Bullock that bad? And the other question they have to try to figure out is Badgley just as good as Bullock potentially? Because a lot of it is, does a guy just get on a roll, get comfortable, and he does the job. Like sometimes you get off, like Badgley got off to a horrible start. Got booed, and they were just like, we can't have this happen again. We got to try somebody else. And it ended up being a musical chairs for a while.
I think you can roll the dice with that perception if you have an offense that reaches the end zone. I realize that Bullock was okay in extra points and good, right? I won't crush him for that, but he also didn't have to attempt very many extra points whenever he's kicking. So, you know, I'm just comparing it to the average attempts for three compared to what that means for this current offense. There's no guarantee that they're moving the football better yet across the 50 and into scoring
range.
Right.
Your point is you got to have great special teams for this team. This team needs to have a plus in special teams.
No
17
doubt.
For 20, 85% is about a little bit better than league average. Right.
But but for whatever reason, Vrabel's only really calling on that with true confidence if it's inside 40 yards. You know, again, they made seven from outside 40 plus. The NFL average was 13 makes from 40 plus. They're not attempting those, even if they get past midfield and up to the 30 yard line. So I struggle with Stonehouse. At least it was a true battle, and you can make the clear argument as to why he's special. You know, they found someone that they can develop and become the next Hendrick or Kern. They can't make that argument at kicker over the last 2 years. It's a turnstile at that position when you, at least if there's a kicking battle, you're bringing in Badgley to compete against Shudak and not the other way around. And it's evident that they feel that way because they've already, you know, deuces to the two that were there, in one cut down day prior to the final audition. And, you know, they're going into a week right now. They don't know who their kicker is for September the 10th. That's a big issue for an offense that struggled to put up 16 points a game a year ago.
Now, Hutt, with that being said, do you think it's Vrabel sort of quietly saying, hey, listen, this offense isn't good enough to not have a kicker on board, someone that we can rely on to make 50 plus yarders or 40 plus yarders? Because my thing is, when this offense was hitting on all cylinders, the kicker was never, we never brought up the kicker. Because why? Because Derrick Henry was doing his thing. A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, they were doing their things. Ryan Tannehill had probably the best season of his career. So we were not worried about the kicker. But the last 2 years, because the offense hasn't been that, the kicker becomes more of a premium.
Yep. And to your point, and this also, you know, Willie, I'll flip it too. Like the 2020 year you're talking about, the third down defense was god-awful, like the worst we've seen. So they were more aggressive offensively because they relied on the best area of their roster. In case of last year, the defense was what they relied on, even when injuries played a factor, because they were getting the most out of that group really all the way through the KC game, for instance. In this case, other offenses can miss a field goal because they have the magician. Right. The Titans don't have the magician that's going to bail them out right now. You can't point to that one dude like you can the other top AFC teams And that's really the difference between this offense and the top offenses in the league. The Titans offense can be good, but the great offenses have the guy. And right now, that's the difference between, okay, if the Chiefs or the Bills or the Bengals, if they miss three, it's not crushing. It's not changing a certain vibe and flow to the game. The Titans, and what Vrabel's pointing out, even on kickoffs, they have to be so dialed in on the fine details of what they must do to not give up a true advantage to the teams that have the quote-unquote magician. And they keep games close. And in close games, the Titans have to have the guy that can put it through the uprights whenever you know you're giving the football back after the attempt to the Mahomes, the Allens, the Burrows, the Trevor Lawrence. Those guys are getting the football back, and they're going against the strength of your defense. You would prefer to have points on the board after a possession if you can do it, if you're in scoring range like the average NFL offense would truly believe in that moment.
D. Mace referenced a very good Titans offense that included the name Corey Davis.
Yeah,
I'm curious what you think. I don't know where they are cap-wise, but if Corey Davis, as speculated, is cut by the Jets, would you be on the phone in a hurry to try to see if he would come back here?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I would have three phones available for all these wide receivers right now.
A couple of burners, a real one.
Yeah. I'd be like Schefter. Be like Schefter getting calls and making calls. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Because, again, Corey Davis is exactly what this offense needs in terms of having a true number two. Hopkins can be a one if Burks isn't there, but there's no number two that elevates, right? And I'm saying that based on what I know Hopkins has been and what they signed him to be. Hopkins can also be the two if Burks is the one. But there's a significant drop-off of the rest of the guys that play a key role around the top two. And the question is, can they find a guy that can step in and be a two if needed? Robert Woods could not do that a year ago. And we've seen other examples of that with Julio Jones, for instance. I'm not saying that guy's available, but that guy is going to be more than just one piece on a certain down and distance or a certain package. And he's also probably going to be in the mix as a returner, given the injuries that they've already sustained and guys that we've seen in the preseason getting a snap at that.
Here's my thing with Corey Davis. Is you would bring him in as a depth piece, as a plug-and-play kind of guy. But if you're bringing him in as more of an insurance piece for other receivers that might be injured, you have to count on Corey Davis being healthy. Can we count on Corey Davis to be healthy and available?
Can we count on Treylon Burks to be that?
No.
Or DeAndre Hopkins? I mean, or this roster?
No. That is one thing we have learned is no, you cannot count on this roster.
Yeah. All of that plays a factor. And look, I raise my hand and say, like, this team has taken swings on guys that have injury histories and they haven't panned out. Well, Bud Dupree comes to mind. You know, like they've drafted, of course, Caleb Farley, who has it. Jeffrey Simmons had the ACL and he's panned out, right? Like they got that right. I'm thinking, though, from what Willie's saying of just, man, at this point, we went out and got Hopkins. Burks is already missing time. Now, you know, Kyle Phillips is on the mend with the MCL. Where are we for what we were trying to be whenever we signed DeAndre Hopkins? Who can come in, who knows the organization, who knows kind of what we're doing, what we're about, and that knows Ryan Tannehill? I think that's also key in getting up to speed fast, because that's not what this offense has been in September over the last 2 years. They've been sluggish and slow against their season opening opponent. And this offense needs to come out and be more than just a two-quarter group that's putting points on the board. At the very least, they need to rack up some time of possession in the second half. And at least in the case of the 2020 year, when we last saw Corey Davis and what he's paid on now, and he won't be paid on that in the future, maybe you can make a case for bringing him back to him and his representation, considering the role he'll play and how quickly he can plug and play based on expectations here versus anywhere else.
Hutton, you are the very best. Appreciate your insight and always for being flexible with our schedule. Chat next week.
No doubt. I'll always do that for you guys, especially when you're covering the pressers and what is a busy time of year. Always enjoy this and have a great rest of the week.
Some things, Hutton. Busy time of the year, but the best time of the year. We'll get into your thoughts coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, DeMays. Hey, your favorite game, Silly Underdog Picks, is back. Make your picks today at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. As week zero of college football kicks off this weekend, we are back, baby. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports.